Okay, women's involvement in 18th century elections was really varied and diverse in this period. We've got women who are politically active from the very bottom of society in various ways, right up to the women at the top of the aristocratic elite. We've got women who are servants involved in elections through the serving of wine and beer and cider and cheese to candidates. We have got women who are being canvassed and the objects of canvassing in boroughs because of the fact that there's an assumption that they have influence over their husband's votes, or in some cases because of the fact that electoral privilege in certain boroughs means that a woman who is the oldest daughter of a freeman, or sometimes the widow of a freeman, can make either her can make her husband a voter. And so consequently, these are women who hold influence in various ways. But there's also an assumption, in quite broad assumption, in the 18th century that a man's two votes might also be one vote for him and one vote for the wife. And somebody like Matthew Crego has written about this a number of years ago. And you do see this, you know, my husband's given one vote and the other vote, it's, you know, she's being asked about the vote. So there's a real degree of influence that women can have, or that are assumed to have, right at the bottom level of society. And these are women who can be very... sometimes very obstreperous about the involvement. So if a political agent comes to them and canvasses them for a vote, and they think he's not been respectful enough or polite enough, perhaps sometimes maybe he hasn't offered them enough money or douceurs of various sorts, they may actually take that right up to the contest of an election and end up being witnesses in a select committee if an election is petitioned to Parliament. So you've got levels of involvement at that level. You also have women who, because of the nature, the multifaceted nature of the franchise prior to 1832, there are always some women who actually own votes. And these are the women who own property in burgage boroughs, where the vote is attached to property. And so while we know that the 18th century women don't vote themselves, although there has been work done by History of Parliament to demonstrate that there are some women who did vote in the 17th century, we know that these women in the 18th century are involved as the objects of canvassing. So if there's a contested election in a burgage borough, someone's going to be coming to them, possibly offering them money, but certainly trying to persuade them to allocate their vote, or to choose someone to be the particular person to vote for them. Now, usually in these kinds of situations, it's a family member who would vote for the woman, so she appoints a proxy. But if you're a widow or you're a single woman, then it becomes more fluid. And there certainly is some really intense canvassing in some boroughs, say, for instance, in Horsham during the elections there, when Lady Ingram is in charge of the borough. So we've got burgage boroughs where women have influence. We've got the kinds of boroughs where freeman status matters, where women can have influence. And then, of course, at the upper levels of society, we have the women who actually... through property inheritance, and of course these are women who are widows and single women, and there are lots of these in the 18th century, or women who have married but have marriage settlements that protect their property. And sometimes it's just because they have husbands who are nice to them. But these women retain degrees of influence over the property that they bring into a marriage or the property that they inherit. And this then becomes something that gives them political status in the community. Now, you get some people who are going to operate exactly in the same way as the male householders in their area. They own property, they are approached by people who want to stand for Parliament, and they either give or don't give their support. They may be actively involved in the actual arrangement of elections as well. You know, there's varying degrees of involvement. At another level, we've got the women who are actually more involved. They may be stepping in for husbands or brothers or minor sons, who, you know, men who are unable to actually be there during an election period. Lady Spencer is a classic example, Georgiana, Duchess of Devonshire's mother, who basically, you know, runs aspects of the Spencer family interest for elections for, you know, years and years. And she has, you know, she meets with an election committee. She's in charge of what's going on. And she's not that exceptional. So there's that kind of electoral involvement or political involvement. There's, of course, also political involvement through patronage, and that can operate at various levels of society. And finally, in terms of political involvement, you have the political involvement of women in the diplomatic world, or the world right at the very top of power politics. And these are usually women from political families who have married into political families and who have been brought up in an intensely political atmosphere, and consequently are interested in politics and very aware of politics. You know, their houses are political hubs, and so this might be somebody like, for instance, Lady Cooper, later Lady Palmerston, daughter of Lady Melbourne, who again is a political woman, or in a slightly different way, but very interestingly, of course, the Duchess of Devonshire herself, and then her daughter, Lady Granville. Diplomatic woman of quite a different sort, but still very important.